What does it mean to be human? Twice this question is posed in the Old Testament, in Psalm 8:3-4 and Job 7:17. And on both occasions, the writer expresses surprise, even incredulity, that God should pay so much attention to his human beings. For we are insignificant in comparison to the vastness of the universe, and impure in contrast to the brightness of the stars. There are at least three major reasons why this question is important. Personally speaking, to ask, "What is humanity?" is another way of asking, "Who am I?" There is no more important field for search or research than our own personal identity. Until we have found ourselves, we can't grow into personal maturity, nor fully discover anything else. "Who am I?" and "Do I have any significance?" are universal cries. Professionally, whatever our work may be, we are inevitably involved in serving people. Doctors and nurses have patients, teachers, pupils, lawyers and social workers, clients, members of parliament, constituents, and business people, customers. How we treat others in our work depends almost entirely on how we view them. Politically, the nature of human beings is central to any political theory. Do human beings have an absolute value because of which they must be respected? Or is their value only relative to the state because of which they may be exploited? More simply, are institutions servants of the people, or are the people servants of institutions? As John S. Whale has written, "Ideologies are really anthropologies. They are different doctrines of humanity." Answers to the question, "What is humanity?" tend to be either too naive in their optimism or too negative in their pessimism about the human condition. Secular humanists are generally optimistic. Although they believe that Homo sapiens is nothing but the product of a random evolutionary process, they nevertheless believe that human beings are continuing to evolve, have limitless potential, and will one day take control of their own development. But such optimists do not take seriously enough the moral failings of humanity and our self-centeredness, which have constantly undermined progress and led to disillusionment in social reformers. Existentialists, on the other hand, tend to be extremely pessimistic. Because there is no God, they say, there are no values, ideals, or standards anymore. And although we need, somehow, to find the courage to be, our existence has neither meaning nor purpose. Everything is ultimately absurd. But such pessimists overlook the love, joy, beauty, truth, hope, heroism and self-sacrifice which have enriched the human story. What we need, therefore, to quote J.S. Whale again, is neither the easy optimism of the humanist nor the dark pessimism of the cynic, but the radical realism of the Bible. Our human dignity. The Bible affirms the intrinsic value of human beings from the first chapter onwards. "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.' So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground.'" There has been a long-standing debate about the meaning of the divine image or likeness in human beings and what it is that distinguishes us from other animals. Keith Thomas collected a number of suggestions in his book Man and the Natural World. He points out that a human being was described by Aristotle as a political animal, by Thomas Willis as a laughing animal, by Benjamin Franklin as a tool-making animal, by Edmund Burke as a religious animal, and by James Boswell, the gourmet, as a cooking animal.